our first presenter today was Stephen Downs, and he's a specialist in online learning and technology and new media. He has a newsletter that I get every morning with a collection of information that I like to read, so thank you for that. It's called Old Daily, and it's distributed by web, by email, by RSS to thousands of subscribers around the world, and as the originator of the MOOC, Massive Open Online Course. So, Stephen, your turn, and I'll share the screen here for you.
There you go. It's all yours.
So, hi everyone, and thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm going to be talking about extending Moodle. Now, I want to be clear before I start that I'm not a Moodle expert. My specialization, of course, is in the field of online learning and learning technology, new media, and associated subjects. I've used Moodle off and on over the years, and I'll point to a few instances of that. My specialization is not Moodle, though, and so if you have technical questions about Moodle, or if I get the technical details about Moodle wrong, please be forgiving. Because this is one of those talks where I walk in here thinking, you guys probably know more about the topic than I do, which is always the worst kind of talk to do. But nonetheless, you're still here, so I really appreciate that. I am recording the talk, and it is being recorded and broadcast, etc. So fair warning, anything you say will eventually be held against you. Je vais parler en anglais parce que c'est ma première langue, mais je peux parler, répondre aux questions en français si tu veux. Alors, poser des questions en français ou anglais à vos choix. Mon français n'est pas parfait, mais j'essaie. And, oh, ta-da. Okay, so. So now it's much bigger. So I come at this topic with a lot of biases and prejudices, etc., which shouldn't surprise you, given that I've been in the field for a long time and I do have my newsletter and I look at stuff every day. And one of them concerns data, and the nice Moodle-style text in the front covers what's in the back. It's now slightly dated, but that's the entity relationship diagram that characterizes Moodle. And the main thing you're supposed to notice about that diagram on the main page is that it's really complex. It has a lot of moving parts. And this is typical of programs that started up, in the 90s or the early 2000s, were written in PHP and gradually got layered over and over and over with new bits of data, new pieces to the database, new modules, and all of that. So I view Moodle as a piece of a technology that was developed, 10, 15 years ago, more, for a very specific purpose. But now we're in a time when technology development and especially learning technology is changing rapidly. Now, you might not think that looking at the field. If you look at the field today, learning technology is dominated by things like Moodle, like Desire to Learn, like corporate learning management systems, etc. And you might think that's the field. But behind the scenes, an awful lot is changing. And it's these changes that I want to focus on and highlight today. I also want to frame the discussion in terms of a challenge. And the challenge really has two parts. The first part is, how can an educational application support integrate within and measure the total state? This is a serious challenge because Typically, when we're looking at online learning, we're typically looking at learning within a specific course, within specific parts of a specific course. We're testing and doing things like that. We're capturing a very narrow state, a very narrow slice of the individual's overall competencies. But the question comes up, how do we capture and recognize and support all the learning activities that a person might undertake in their career? And even in government, people work inside and outside the official environment, and even within the official environment, they might work here, they might work there. We still don't have, and probably never will have, the one true system, the one true learning management system that will support us all. Although I know that there are efforts in that direction, but I don't think we'll ever end up there. The other part of the challenge is, and it's related, how can the learner maintain his or her identity and integrity from environment to environment? You've probably heard the slogan regarding Facebook, if you are not paying for the product, then you are the product. And what this catchphrase is intended to express is that services like Facebook, services like Twitter, LinkedIn, Amazon, the rest, exist based on the capturing and use of personal data, data about you. And the more we see these systems becoming integrated, the more personal data is being taken from us and put into this, I don't even know what to call it, this digital environment, well, it doesn't really have a name, corporatosphere. But the idea here is that gradually the value and the integrity of our personal information is being eroded. And this is especially happening in the field of learning. I've done a lot of work with both corporate learning and government learning, and the desire is always to capture, record, and keep as much information as possible about the learner. And this begins to infringe on workplace rights, on privacy and security. So we have these two questions, right? How do we balance these? How do we know about the total state of the learner, but keep the learner's data, keep the integrity of the learner's data? So this is the overall plan. It's a government talk, so I know people like plans, so I'm giving you a 5-part plan. I'll begin with some overall trends. I'll talk about interoperability a bit. Look a little bit at some selected bits from the Moodle roadmap. Talk a bit about modern learning. I always think of David Bowie when I look at that part. And then the fun part at the end, extending Moodle. So the three trends I want to look at, you've probably all heard of them because they're in all the magazines. MOOCs, learning analytics, and personalized learning. So MOOCs, that didn't really, well, I guess that comes out pretty well there. Well, that's a really interesting screen. I didn't really notice before, it's not really a single screen. So MOOCs were invented by, among others, the National Research Council of Canada. In 2008. This is a diagram from the very first massive open online course. It was hosted by George Siemens at the University of Manitoba and myself at NRC. It was called Connectivism and Connective Knowledge. And there's a few things I want to point out about this course, which you might find interesting. This real static bit that looks like a table of contents, that's actually Moodle. We supported our first MOOC with Moodle. And it's worthy of note that as the course progressed, we shifted away from Moodle and more to the other parts of the course. The rest of that, quite frankly, mess is all the rest of the course. And the rest of the course consisted of things like wiki pages, Google Groups, Second Life groups, Twitter, Facebook, and a bunch of other things. And what we did is we set it up so that all of these things were interconnected together. The idea was to create a course based on a learning theory called connectivism. And the objective of connectivism is to foster learning by fostering connections between people, between systems, between ideas. By the creation of these connections, we are able to create new knowledge that did not necessarily exist prior to the course. This was one of the challenges of our MOOC, is that we did not have a quote-unquote curriculum. We did not have learning objectives. The point of the course was for us to go in and demonstrate a kind of learning that is based more on activity and interaction rather than remembering content and more traditional educational activities. So since then, there's been a lot of development, of course, in the field of massive open online courses, but not so much from the perspective of Moodle. I find that very interesting. Now, one of the difficulties we had working with Moodle, and this has persisted even to this day, has been the sign-in. And back then, we actually had to work with, we had an application called Grasshopper, which pulled all of this stuff together. And we had to coordinate the Grasshopper sign-in with the Moodle sign-in, because there's nothing worse than making somebody sign in twice to a course. They get really confused. And with Moodle, actually it was even worse, because of course you sign up for Moodle and then you sign up for the course. So we actually had, well, could have had, and we would have had three sign-ups, right? Sign up for Grasshopper, and that gets you the newsletter. Sign up for Moodle, that gets you into Moodle. Sign up for Connectivism and Connective Knowledge. For those of you wondering, that's me hitting the microphone with my hand. Sorry about that. Moodle had issues as well with Massive. And I think it still does have issues with Massive, honestly. And where we found the biggest problem was in the discussion area. And of course, this is the core of Moodle, right? This is the thing that makes Moodle different. Now, it's good to have a discussion area, and threaded discussions are, you know, one of the great learning tools in history. But when you have 2,200 people in a single discussion, that created issues. You know, the introductory thread, "Hi, my name is," went on and on and on. I don't think anybody finished reading it. I know I didn't finish reading it. And we found that we had a lot of power plays taking place. It was a lot of, you know, you get, in 2,200 people, you're going to get some very dominant personalities, and they would come out. And so we had a discussion area that would feature 10 people that was supposed to serve 2,200 people. So what we did partway through the course is actually encourage people to leave the Moodle discussion area and to begin using their own blogs or their own Facebook or Twitter accounts or Google groups or whatever instead of using the discussion area. Distributing it made it possible for us to support a massive number of people, but it meant leaving Moodle. So that's one, massive open online course. Learning analytics is the second major trend. You've all heard all of the buzz. Really, there's two major aspects to learning analytics. I don't want to say one is boring and the other is interesting, but one is boring and the other, sorry. Okay, so the one that gets all the hype is predictive analytics. And predictive analytics, there's really two aspects to this. One aspect of this is in terms of diagnosis of where a student is going. So the analytic looks at what the student in the course has done. They've looked at so much content, they've signed into the discussion list, etc. And then it projects how the student is going to do or what they're likely to do. That's, you know, the very simple version of this. You can actually do analytics that look at what subjects or what areas they've struggled in, etc., to predict where they're going to struggle in the future. The other aspect of predictive analytics is using this kind of information plus other information about the individual in order to recommend additional resources, such as new contents, new activities, people that they could talk to, etc. Now, with both of these kind of analytics, from my perspective, working within a learning management system specifically gives you what I call shallow analytics. It's shallow because it's only looking at your behavior or your performance within a single system. Deep analytics would look at your performance in Moodle, your performance in Elle, your performance in Facebook, your performance in LinkedIn, your performance in email, etc. Now, of course, we can't get deep analytics without, you know, a horrible breach of privacy. There's that issue that I framed off the top of the talk. Nonetheless, it does create a weakness in predictive analytics. These analytics are pretty well established now. They're used by sites like Netflix or ShowMe, etc. You know, and they're based very often, well, based very often, based always on comparisons between types of resources. And they use a clustering method to cluster similar sorts of resources and types of users. Again, they use a clustering method. So essentially the idea is a person like you has viewed this kind of resource thusly, therefore you will view this kind of resource thusly. Predictive, right? The second kind of analytics is a lot more interesting. It's a lot deeper, it's a lot harder. Again, a lot of the technology's already been worked out at the analytics end, but it hasn't been broadly implemented into systems like Moodle, although, and it's not on the slide here, I thought I'd have access to my comments, but I don't. But there are some analytics even in Moodle that do this. And basically they're content recognition type analytics. I'll give you an example. One type of rubric for marking somebody in Moodle is their participation in a discussion list, right? And it can be a simple rubric, right? Like did not participate, participated a bit, participated a lot. That's kind of it's a really judgmenty kind of task, and it's a real pain to do, and it's really not practical to do for anything more than a few people. But there is analytics available in Moodle as a plugin now, and I've forgotten the name of it. But if you get these slides, and I'm sure they'll be available after, it's in the notes on this slide. What it does is it looks at your participation in discussion lists, grades it according to a bunch of different criteria, based on not simply the frequency of your participation, but based on an analysis of the content of your participation. Did you ask a question? Did you add to the discussion? Was there a response to what you said, etc.? So looking at what kind of contribution you made helps understand how much you participated in the forum, so you can analyze the content and come up with a grade, you know, participated a little, participated a lot, etc. This kind of analytic, the most common sort of version of this kind of analytic is sentiment analysis. You see that sometimes with Twitter or Facebook posts where you send the analytics engine the post, it comes back, oh, this tweet was bitter, or this tweet was happy, etc. These kind of analytics are going to be used a lot in the future. Not simply for assessment, although partially, but also too for the matching of learning resources with subject areas, etc. Personalized learning. Just as an aside, I really prefer to distinguish between personalized learning and personal learning. everybody's doing personalized learning right now. So I prefer personal learning. The difference between personalized learning and personal learning is personalized learning takes a system and modifies the system in order to adapt to individual users. Personal learning is a system that helps an individual user define their own learning for themselves. You see the difference. It's like the difference between customized cars and custom cars. So with personalized learning, there's really three major things that to look for. One is what might be called rules-based events. And notifications is a classic example of that. A personalized learning system will look at whether you have triggered a rule. A really simple rule is you signed up for the course. It'll fire off a notification. Hello, welcome to the course. More sophisticated rule-based notifications will look at things like it's 3 weeks into the course and you did not do module two, therefore fire off a notification. And there are plugins for Moodle that do this. A more complex version of the same sort of thing is to create a user model. And as an aside, there's that microphone again. As an aside, there's a whole initiative in IMS, Instructional Management Systems. You can find it at imsglobal.org. A whole learning model initiative. And so the idea here is that you're able to define different properties of the learner. What their language is, where they're from, do they have disabilities, do they have a preference for a certain subject, use the system a lot, etc. Based on those properties, you can trigger different sorts of events or different sorts of services. So if a person, for example, is known to be colorblind, then you could send them the colorblind friendly resource as opposed to the full color resource. That's just an example I made up. So. But you get the idea. Adaptive learning takes that to the nth degree, and the idea of adaptive learning is that it responds to the work that you're actually doing in the course and then presents resources or sections of resources accordingly. The simplest kind of adaptive learning is a loop kind of system. You're running through the course, you do a test. If you pass the test, you keep going. If you don't pass the test, you loop back and do the thing again. More advanced adaptive learning will give you a different kind of resource if you fail the test, or maybe we'll look at where you failed the test, what questions, give you different resources based on that, etc. So all of these are types of personalized learning. They're being supported in all major learning management systems today to more or less a degree, and this is going to be, well up in the hype cycle for the foreseeable future. Long term, though, I think that we're looking at personal learning. I think that we're looking at mechanisms to enable a person to select their own resources based on their own needs and their own preferences. But that's hard. It's hard because you need to define a whole interface that allows people to make these kind of choices when they don't have, off the top of their head, the information they need to make these choices. Interoperability. So, if you don't know about LTI, Learning Tools Interoperability, you should learn about LTI. And there's two major aspects of this. Both aspects impact Moodle. LTI producer, LTI consumer. Here's what LTI is in a nutshell. It's a mechanism that allows one program or one server to run another program or another server. So, for a simple example, suppose you're on a web page. Embedded in that web page might be a quiz. That quiz might be offered by a completely separate organization and run on a completely different machine. But your web page that you're looking at used LTI in order to launch that quiz. Now, I'm hand waving over a fair bit of this, but the idea here is that on the web, websites are are sandboxed from each other. So information about one website is not available to another website. What LTI does is it allows, in the background, the other website to give information to the first website about the tool that has been used. So an LTI producer is a service that creates an application that another website can use. So if I'm an LTI producer, I'm the person offering that quiz that I talked about. An LTI consumer is a website that uses that service. So in the example I gave, the LTI consumer is the website which has the quiz embedded in it. So Moodle does both, right? And this is one of the things that we actually did last year. We ran a personal learning course, a personal learning MOOC. We used a personal learning environment to run the course, but the course itself was offered in OpenEdX. Could have been offered in Moodle. The developer said, please, please, please use Moodle. It's so much easier to work with. But we're a research organization. So we took the harder one, which was OpenEdX, which is not a simple system to use. But the idea was that we had the personal learning environment, and we used LTI to connect with OpenEdX, and then displayed resources from OpenEdX in what is called a modal, or an open window, from the personal learning environment. And so consequently, we're able to use an external system to access resources inside the OpenEdX system. This is significant because it kind of changes the role of the learning management system, doesn't it? Typically, in a learning management system, all of your students come to you. They sign up here, they look at your resources in the Moodle itself, they do all their discussions in the Moodle itself. But this offers the possibility of accessing Moodle resources from a third-party site, like our personal learning environment. Similarly, inside Moodle, you can access third-party resources, and that's the more common use of LTI. So, for example, you could access a discussion board or a quiz or a simulation or some such thing. Same sort of idea, except now Moodle is the LTI consumer, and the producer is the producer of one of these things that you're accessing from a third party. Cloud storage. Everybody's talking cloud these days. The best thing I've seen recently is one of those Facebook memes that goes around. There is no cloud, it's just someone else's computer. strictly speaking, that's true. Strictly, even more strictly speaking, it's not exactly a computer, it's an array of computers, anyhow. A couple of things. There is cloud hosting of Moodle, of course, which is one of the things that makes Moodle really useful. It's what, moodle.com/cloud, I think is the URL. It's in my notes there, so I'm working from memory here. So that's interesting. More interesting, and I think more significant in the long run, is the fact that we can have our files hosted not on the Moodle system, but elsewhere in the cloud. I do that a lot just generically. I keep my photos in Flickr. I keep my documents on Google Drive. I keep my secret documents on Microsoft OneDrive. Sorry, just kidding. Slideshows on SlideShare, videos on YouTube, I use Dropbox. I even use OwnDrive, which is a cloud storage system that sits on a hard drive that's sitting in my living room on my network in my home. Really cool. And so what you can do now as an instructor developer in Moodle is access your cloud hosted files. What's coming down the pipe eventually is everybody accessing their cloud-based files for everything. Now, there's going to be more about that a little bit later in this talk. But I think it's really significant that a person working in Moodle can actually have all of their documents somewhere else, not in Moodle. And it sort of raises the question, how do we view Moodle, or how do we view any application when the application doesn't even manage the data that it's managing? It kind of turns our mind around that. So hold this, keep this, I'm going to come back to it. Third thing is authentication. Authentication, again, is one of these horrible, thorny issues. I was involved in the early days of something called OpenID, which was a great idea, which didn't work. It was a great idea that got taken over by Facebook and Google and then broken. But the idea of OpenID was that your ID was basically a web address. And your web address was an OpenID server, so that when you went to a remote site, you could just click on a button that said OpenID. There'd be a little back and forth behind the scenes, and your web server would authenticate you into the website you were visiting. Today we have that where people say, log in with Facebook. So you click on the little button that says log in with Facebook. It might take you to a little Facebook page that says, will you authorize this application? You click yes, because you always do. You go back and you're done. Yeah, I know. What you haven't seen, of course, is the thing that you've signed into is now slurping your contact list, your calendar, all of your photos, your blood type. I liked OpenID because it didn't do that. I actually developed a system called MIDM, Mighty Me, or Mighty Me, where the URL of your website was actually stored in your browser header, so you didn't even need to click the button. It was all handled behind the scenes. So Moodle supports all of that. It also supports LDAP authentication, which is what we're familiar with in the civil service, right? Use your government ID, or in my case, use your NRC ID, because we're not on Canada. Canada.ca addresses yet. I don't even know it yet, because we're still on NRC-CNRC.gc.ca. We've had issues. Okay, Moodle roadmap. So I'm just going to zip through this because there's a whole big set of stuff. The URL is in the notes for this page, so gather this. Moodle 3.1 now has support for outcomes. It has support for competencies. You can import competency definitions. There's a long page of explanations and examples. The easy part, in my experience, is setting this up, right? Because, you know, you use metadata, right? So you have a competency. Competency has an ID. You have a learning resource. Learning resource has a field which matches the competency ID. You have tests, quizzes that match that same competency ID, etc. And you can go all the way through to using the competencies in order to develop your own learning plans. Now, right now, a lot of this is done manually, but we talked about analytics a bit earlier in the talk. A big part of what the predictive analytics are intended to do is to use the competencies in order to help you map out your learning plans. So a lot of that's still kind of in the early stages. But if you take competencies and learning plans, match them with analytics, and do the recognition task kind of analytics, then you're able to automate a lot of this. One of the things that I think will be important, for example, is a way to automatically match a learning resource to a competency and a competency definition. Because doing that manually is, well, It's not going to be done manually. There's just too many competencies, too many learning resources, too many possibilities for error, and we've learned from our experience in learning object metadata, where there were only 87 fields, people used, and it was measured, 7 of those. They'll do the same thing with competencies, so there has to be an automated system of matching resources to competencies and automatically generating learning plans. All the systems are doing this, or in the beginning stages of doing this. Some of them are more advanced than others. But this is the main thing that's rolling out over the next year or two. Learning processes. I could do a whole talk on learning processes, but I can't because there isn't time. But what we want to look at for learning processes, I mean, there's the whole idea of learning design and orchestrating a learning activity and all of that. A lot of that, again, is subject to automation. For example, a classic case is in group formation. Moodle does have a group formation plugin, but you have your worst case scenario. You have 2,200 students, you have 1,500 of those aren't really active, which means your normal result is you have a group with 1 active person and 4 or 5 non-active persons. It's not a very good result. So there needs to be intelligence applied to group formation. Content, open educational resources. This is an area where I really think Moodle could be stronger, but the idea here is to tap in, not just using LTI, but tap into repositories, an open educational resource library to bring in content. Moodle is beginning to move in this direction. There's the recently launched Moodle.net site that makes available, for example, entire Moodle courses that you can download and upload into your own system. But there's tons, literally tons, even digital tons, whatever that is, of open educational resources and open content out there that can and should be used to support learning in Moodle. Modern learning, focusing on personal learning records, we are going to see this. I don't know when, but a lot of this stuff is already happening. I thought we would see it sooner than we are seeing it. A personal learning record is, broadly conceived, a record or a set of records that has an existence independently of any particular learning management system. Now, I just made up that definition at this moment. But we see instances of that all over the place. Right now, there's a mechanism for recording learning activities. The data format is called XAPI. The activities are stored in what is called a learning record store, or LRS. And this forms the basis, the data, for a lot of the analytic systems to work on. The interesting thing is the activity record, the LRS, can be anywhere. It's not necessarily going to be in Moodle. Indeed, it'll probably be a standalone thing. Just like Mahara is a standalone thing for badges and portfolio. It's outside of Moodle, but it's connected to Moodle. Another thing you've probably read or seen a lot of talk about what are called blockchains. Don Tapscott has made headlines with that recently. This is where blockchains come into education. The traditional way of looking at certification, you've passed a course or whatever, is that the degree or certificate granting institution will maintain a record on their own site, possibly not a publicly accessible record. And if you want to prove that you've completed a certificate, you have to send people to that agency, send them for transcripts or whatever. The idea of a blockchain is you can have and share the record yourself, but it's encrypted in such a way that it cannot be faked. So if you use a blockchain encryption type record, you can show that you have a degree or a badge or certificate directly without having to appeal to the third party, because the security of the blockchain ensures that you have not altered that record. Blockchains are used originally for financial transactions where this sort of integrity is important, but there are new systems coming up that allow for any kind of record. If you're really interested in this, and you should be, well, to a degree, look up a site called DAO, D-A-O, and it's a mechanism for forming blockchain-based corporations for the exchange of all kinds of things of value. Really, really interesting stuff. Competencies and skills, again, this is something from Advanced Distributed Learning. Those of you from the military will be familiar with ADL. It's the major organization for learning in the U.S. military. They're launching, in fact, the actual formal launch is May 24th, the Competency and Skills System. And the idea is that you have learner profiles that are basically individual representations of competency frameworks. You have the framework on the left, and then the individual learning profile on the right. And of course, once you have that, with analytics, you have the basis for recommending learning resources, building learning paths, etc. Docker. I gave Docker its own slide. I probably shouldn't. But here's the concept. Again, for those of you who already know Docker, I'm sorry. I'm going to slide over a lot of the essential points, but here's the idea. You have an application that sits on a server, and you can use that application as you need to use it. You store your data somewhere else, and you bring your data to the application, use the application, then you store your data somewhere else. So picture this. You have a system. Your system accesses your learning record or your learning data from your cloud storage. It uses third-party applications that are stored out there in the cloud somewhere and does things like send it for analytics and get something back and store it. Send it for processing, bring it back and store it, etc. The idea here is that the application exists in the cloud. It doesn't care about preserving data, that's your job, but it provides data processing on demand. Now, that's a really different kind of system. The system we have with Moodle right now, we have an application with a great big whacking database with all of those boxes and arrows that I showed you off the top. That kind of breaks into a bunch of different parts, doesn't it? You can keep your data, whatever data you want, somewhere else. Moodle might have a very basic data structure, and then Docker will take care of all the processing. That's coming. I'm not sure what it will do to Moodle. I'm not sure what the time frame will be, but you should be thinking standalone data in cloud-hosted environments for processing by third-party applications. Extensions for Moodle. You can use this to support simulations and work environments. Think of a combination of Docker, third-party data, and LTI. Employment opportunities. Take your learning records that you created using Moodle. They're now sitting in a third-party storage site somewhere. Now you can directly contribute them to a job-finding site, or there's the Treasury branches. Micromission site, that's a project that NRC has been involved with. They use ELG, not Moodle, but it's still the same sort of thing. Use your learning records, put them into an employment opportunity. Finally, very last thing. Here's the picture we have now. Use your browser, access Moodle or G2L or something else. So right now, use your browser, access Moodle, G2L, or whatever. Moodle handles your data, your identity, your services, etc., and then we'll connect to the back end. But in the future, I'm using PLE, but it could be any sort of intermediary system. Your data, identity, and social network, etc., exist in the cloud They have their own independent storage and management. Your PLE then uses that to access things like Moodle, D2L, etc. This is true not just for the individual, but also on the learning management side. Down the road, eventually, Moodle or any learning management system will be a system for accessing third-party resources and delivering them. That's my time, that's my talk, and I thank you very much. I will be.
So I will open up the floor for a couple of questions, and then I'll hand it over to Richard and Sonia from CBSA as our next presenters. So do we have any questions in the room? Sure, one. There's some in the chat, isn't it? All right, so Stephen, I think because there's no short questions doesn't mean there's no questions. I'll let you go, and if you'd like to stick around, I'm sure that we will be able to.
All right, thank you very much.
So Richard and Sonia from CBSA will be our next presenters, telling us how what they're doing at CBSA.
Good morning, everyone. First, I'd like to say thanks to Nadine and Fred and the folks at the school for setting this up. I think this is a fantastic opportunity for us to show what we're all doing with the tool respectively and do a little bit of networking afterwards.